I mean, I do switch my age sometimes when I'm trying to meet different demographics.
Oh, my goodness.
You do?
Well, if I didn't tell the truth, I'd be lying, yes. It's kind of like when you go into a bathroom stall and there's like 40 open, and you go use one and a guy comes right next to you. It just goes along with my theory that the best actors, singers, and writers are all from England. Same with Jesus.
And Jesus is from England, too?
Well, that's obviously. What I hear.
Blonde hair, blue-eyed. You may find a clue in the Constitution.
Godzilla and me kind of have the same, like, body shape, like the same frame.
I feel like it's like a Dumbo remake. Wait, they did that too.
They already did it.
It would be almost like they redid like Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast and Lion King.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank heaven they're not doing that. Each of those.
Ben, do you know what Andy's doing while we're talking about this movie?
Texting?
No, he's swiping left and right.
On Tinder?
Yes.
I mean, right. Will Smith's a legend too, but in a different way. Don't you think?
Yeah. Because he played in the movie I Am Legend.
That's a good point, Ben. Okay, so movies coming out this week. First, we have Aladdin.
Oh, great one who summons me. I stand by my oath. Loyalty to wishes three.
I'm kidding. Watch this.
Watch out! You done wound me up. You ain't never had a friend like me.
I just played a clip from Aladdin. This is Disney's, what do you call it, live action take on Aladdin with Will Smith as the genie.
This seems like it's kind of like the new like thing to do. Like it's like a fad in the 70s or 80s. Like they're making new movies of all their past ones, aren't they? Didn't they do that?
Just Disney is doing that.
Yeah.
Well, it's so easy to remake a movie because you have a built-in audience. I would be concerned if I was Will Smith playing the genie. Because how can you, like everyone thinks of Aladdin, they think of the
greatest ever actor ever.
Yeah.
Who was?
I would feel so much pressure.
Robin Williams.
Yeah. I saw on Twitter people were not reacting well to Will Smith as the genie.
Yeah, that's normal.
It's kind of like trying to take the place of a legend. You'll never... I mean, right. Will Smith's a legend too, but in a different way, don't you think?
Yeah. Because he played in the movie I Am Legend.
That's a good point, Ben.
I wish I had said that.
Andy, you just keep setting me up.
I'm a little bummed about this movie. I feel like it's going to tarnish my good memory of Aladdin.
I don't know.
It looks good to me. The early previews looked really dumb to me, but the more recent ones that have more like content, I think it's going to be okay.
Okay, good.
I feel like it's another trick by Disney to like get the people that liked Star Wars. They're trying to trick all their kids into liking it too. And like we all grew up with our childhood loving like Aladdin and all this, and now they're just trying to trick us into taking our kids.
I'll bet they have a plan to make money.
Dang it. You got me again.
Well, yeah. They figured out tapping into nostalgia is very profitable. So, yeah. So that's Aladdin. The next movie coming out this week in wide release is Booksmart.
We have to go to a party tonight.
What?
Nobody knows that we are fun. We didn't party because we wanted to focus on school and get into good colleges.
And it worked.
But the irresponsible people who partied also got into those colleges. We haven't done anything. We haven't broken any rules.
Name one person whose life was so much better because they broke a couple of rules.
Picasso.
He broke art rules.
Rosa Parks.
Name another
Susan
one.
Susan B. Anthony.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Booksmart. This looks so funny. This is directed by Olivia Wilde, which is, I guess it's her first director credit. And Booksmart is currently 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got 56 reviews. So
it's 100%?
Yeah.
You can't.
What was the last movie we saw that was 100% on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, I think it was The Breakthrough?
It was Us.
Oh, Us. That's
not,
right.
Not The Breakthrough. Right. No, Us. Remember when we were... The week Us was coming out, you're
Us.
Like, isn't that?
I could not believe, and it lived up to it, though.
Yeah, the preview was kind of refreshing, too. Not because it was, like, all girls, but just because of their personalities, and it was just a different take. Because usually it's just, like, boys that age, you know?
Yeah. What was the movie, like, Superbad? What is, like, an equivalent with just boys?
Well, yeah, and I'm also thinking of, like, Shazam, but... that's not accurate because there were girls in there too. I don't. I just felt like it was refreshing to see those characters at that age.
So it looks like it's a story of two girls who like did everything right. They would skip the partying so they could study. And by the time they're graduating from high school, they feel like they missed out on all the good times they could have had.
Wait, is this about me?
I know. I can so relate to that feeling.
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be really good. It looks like it's going to be kind of raunchy. Is it rated R?
I didn't notice.
I thought the one part from the previews that was really funny is when the parents think they're lesbians, or was I thinking?
Yeah, and she's like, well, what are you guys going to be doing together? And the girl's like I can't explain. She's trying to make her, like her friend wanted to give the impression they were lesbians.
Yeah.
But the daughter was like, no, we're not going to do that. She's like, Mom, we're just going to be doing like crayons or something. And her mom, played by Lisa Kudrow, is like, I don't need to know all the words.
Don't say we're having a date night. Why? It's funny your parents think we're boning.
What you two have is special.
Mm-hmm. We are going to show each other how much we care about each other.
We'll probably just do a crayon face mask.
I don't need to know all the words.
Playing with crayons. Oh my God.
All right. That is Booksmart. That looks really good. The next movie coming out this week in wide release is Brightburn.
Whatever you've done, I know there is good in you.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Brightburn. This is basically the concept is it's if Superman was evil and he arrives on Earth and his parents raise him, but he's not like saving, he's not a hero. He's actually evil. Is that right?
That's what it looks like to me. Because throughout the preview, I thought they were just rebooting Superman because it had all of the same memorable elements of Superman until
the first like 10 seconds of the preview. It is basically the Superman story.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see it, but I'm afraid it's going to be a scary movie because I have such a hard time in scary movies.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see that the Superman remake, or what is it called? Brightburn. That one and the high school one.
Booksmart.
Those two are really exciting. Me too.
Yeah, I could maybe skip Aladdin. Like, I'm not necessarily dying to see that one.
I feel like it's like a Dumbo remake. Wait, they did that too.
They already did it.
It would be almost like they redid like Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast Lion King.
Yeah. Thank heaven they're not doing that. Each of those.
Okay, and that's Bright. Is that all we have to say about Brightburn?
Yeah.
It's hard to say a lot before we see
it. I am excited to see it. The preview's really good.
That is Brightburn. And that is this week. So if you're wondering what to see this week, this podcast is going to come out on every Thursday morning from now on. So people can listen to it and decide like what they want to see that weekend. And we just covered the three that are coming out. Okay, let's do next week, and then we'll go back to cover last week and do our reviews. That's the format I think I want to do from now on.
Yep.
Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay, so next week, coming out in wide release, looking forward to next week, is Godzilla, King of Monsters. Played a clip from the movie for Godzilla, King of Monsters. This looks like it's going to be a total like display of CGI.
Yeah. It reminded me of so much. The preview reminded me so much of, is it Titans? Or let's see, what's the one where they have those humongous robots who fight the...
Oh, yeah. What was that called?
Pacific Rim?
Yes, that's it.
Pacific Rim. Okay.
Are you guys interested in this movie? Like, I feel like I saw the previews and I saw enough of, like...
I know. Well, the most recent preview I saw before I saw John Wick, it was super extended and it showed tons of clips. It looked really cool to me because they show the, you know, they introduced each of the, what do you call them, titans? Because they showed Mothra, then they showed the three-headed dragon, then they show how Godzilla fights, and they showed a lot. It looked really cool.
You know what is cool? Godzilla and me kind of have the same, like, body shape, like the same frame.
No, but you guys remember the early previews? They're having a conversation in front of, like, Congress or something, saying, oh, so we're going to be Godzilla's pet? And he says, no, I said it wrong. Like he's
it was the reverse.
No,
yeah.
We're his pet.
Yeah.
And that to me was kind of like an eye roll. I don't know. I thought that was kind of lame the way it was delivered. But the newest previews are much better and they give me a lot better, a lot higher hope.
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be cool CGI fighting. I just hope there's like a real story to it as well.
Yeah. It seems like one of those movies where they just have fast cars and drive around and beat each other up the whole time.
Yeah,
they're like, well, we could have a good story or explosions.
Yeah.
Okay, that is Godzilla, King of Monsters. The next movie out in wide release next week is Ma.
Excuse me, can you buy some booze for my friends and I?
Not interested.
Please?
Hell. Ooh, there's my girl. This never happened, okay?
Thanks again for doing this, ma'am.
You guys want to party like rock stars? Follow me.
Let's get drunk!
The bar is open.
What do you think?
We don't know this chick.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Ma. What is this woman's name that's the main, like, villain?
It's not Ma?
I don't know her.
Oh, her, like, real name.
Her real name? Octavia Spencer?
Yes. And she's in a lot of movies, and she has a really, to me, like, her face is so distinct and memorable. It almost takes me out of the movie a little bit because I think of all the other movies she was in.
Yeah. So how can you summarize the premise, Ben? She's like a next to a sorority house or something. She kind of befriends these college kids.
Yeah. So the preview leads me to believe that she just happens to be in front of a convenience store. A bunch of teenagers who are underage ask her to buy alcohol for them, and she does. And then she says, oh, come party at my house. It's cool. And then it escalates, or they keep partying over at her house, and they find out that maybe she has ulterior motives, or there's something weird going on with her.
She's like an obsessive stalker or something.
Yeah. At the very end, it leads me to believe that she knows these kids' parents and is out for some sort of revenge against their parents.
Oh, to blackmail them, or maybe?
Yeah. That's what I got from it.
Aren't they mostly white kids and she's black?
I think so.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Okay. And that is Ma. The next movie out, another movie, the last movie out next week in wide release is Rocket Man.
So that is a fat boy from nowhere. Get to be a soul man.
Gotta kill the person you were born to be in order to become the person you want to be.
I'm thinking of changing my name to Elton.
But that's my name.
Yeah, I know.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Rocket Man. This is a biopic of, what's his name?
Elton John.
Elton John.
Elton John.
Of Elton John's life. It looks a lot like the Queen. What was the Queen one called?
The Queen?
My brain is not working.
About Queen, yeah. Except this one, to me, the preview on this and the actor, it just looks like it's going to be amazing. He looks like such a great actor.
Isn't that interesting when they did the Johnny Cash movie? It's always interesting to see the actor they match up with a famous, like, singer or you know, with Joaquin Phoenix was Johnny Cash and he sang so well.
In that movie. He is amazing.
I agree.
So this kid's name is, I say he kid because he feels like a kid to me, but it's Edgerton. What's his, Taron Egerton. So he's like the lead of that action series. This English James Bond style.
Oh, is that him? Like the, it's on the tip of my tongue. What was that called?
Kingsman.
Yeah.
Kingsman.
That was him. I didn't realize it.
Yeah, he's from Kingsman. And he's also from Robin Hood that came out last year. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Oh, yeah.
It bombed at the box office, but it was pretty decent. I saw it.
That's right. You know, the funny thing about this preview is I really want to see this. I did not want to see the Queen movie because I felt like everyone in the audience would be singing along and I would be annoyed. But this, I didn't feel like it. I felt like it was more of a story about him and not just, oh, let's play all the hits and so you guys buy the album.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, wasn't Elton John in the last Kingsman movie with Taron Egerton?
I don't know.
Do you remember that? With, in the last Kingsman movie, he was in it with Taron Egerton and who's that redheaded woman from Gloria?
Yeah, Gloria Bell. Oh, it's Julianne Moore.
The old woman.
Oh, Gloria Bell is what it was called. Not Gloria. Yeah,
it was like a remake of a Chilean movie. And
Yeah.
It's okay. Julianne Moore.
Is that it for Rocket Man? Looks like it'll be fun. Okay.
I will say that those two are both English singers, right?
What two?
Elton John.
And Reginald Dwight.
And Queen.
Freddie Mercury?
Yeah.
Is he English? I didn't think so, but I don't know.
I thought they were.
It just goes along with my theory that the best actors, singers, and writers are all from England. Same with Jesus.
And Jesus is from England, too?
Well, that's what I hear.
Blonde hair, blue-eyed.
I've heard that. Oh, yeah. That he, like, they took off to England.
They took... Wait, what?
Wait.
So he's not from the Middle East? He's from England?
No, like, they took him to England, and, like, that's where he had a wife and kids, and then he went back to the Middle East.
What? Really? You heard that?
Yeah, there's people that actually believe that.
Like historians?
Well, there's a sect of people that believe it.
Oh, okay. But it's not like some historical discovery?
They think that the Joseph that buried him in the tomb, the Joseph of Arimathea, was his, like, uncle, and they lived in England, and then he came back.
Oh, interesting. Like, and is that how, like, in black churches, some people pray to black Jesus? Because they like to think of him as, like...
Yeah.
No, well, think isn't of it amazing?
It, what was it? He... The Talladega Nights, he praised a baby Jesus.
No, remember that movie, the Dan Brown movie about the books and the Knights Templar and everything?
Yeah.
It kind of talks about that, about Jesus being from England.
Really? I've never heard that he, well, I thought it was like canon that he never traveled more than, like, I don't know, 50 miles from where he was born.
You'll have to research that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, you may find a clue in the Constitution.
That's pretty funny.
Okay, that's it for last week. So moving on to next week, update on Avengers Endgame. It is now number 2. It's still number 2.
Yeah, still.
All time behind Avatar. But today it surpassed Star Wars The Force Awakens in the domestic box office. So it's now number 2 domestically. I don't know if it's going to take over Avatar, but...
I hope it does. I think it...
Do you want me to read it?
Oh, I was just showing you that Google shows that it's a theory.
Okay, so Andy searched, was Jesus from England? And there are results on Google. That's a shocker.
Andrew, okay. You're just illustrating that there are diverse beliefs about everything.
Okay, sure. So according to this website, there's at least a myth that Jesus visited England, traveled to England as a young boy,
and with
his uncle Joseph of Arimathea. Okay, so basically there's a horse race right now between Avengers Endgame and Avatar, and so it'll be fun to see what happens. Okay, so moving on to last week in the box office, there were 3 new movies out in wide release. Should we start at the bottom or the top? Let's start at the bottom. So coming in at number 8 was The Sun is Also a Star.
My key ingredients to falling in love are friendship, chemistry, and the X Factor.
What's the X Factor?
Don't worry, we've got it.
I just played a clip from the trailer for The Sun is Also a Star. We've all seen it. It is currently... I'm seeing what it is.
50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's slightly worse than a Hallmark.
What? Are you just saying that because I loved it so much?
I actually really did like it because the people were so beautiful, but...
That helped.
Yeah, that really did help. And, I mean, it kind of felt a little bit like a Budweiser commercial. In that, like, they show, like, Budweiser and girls in bikinis and really handsome men with really beautiful hair. And it just seemed like they...
I don't even remember a girl in a bikini.
There weren't scantily clad women, but, yeah, the 2 main characters were very attractive.
Meaning, like, they're selling an idea, but the actual idea is maybe a little bit more fluffy than the people selling it.
Yeah, so let me just... kind of to what you're saying, like, oh, they just had really attractive people. Think if you're trying to tell a story about 2 people who want to be together and you want to convince the viewers, or you want to help them feel like they're on your side, like you want them to get together. So an easy way to do that is if you have really attractive people, because you would want to be with them, it's easy for you to be attracted to them. Like, you're rooting for the characters.
Yeah. True. So have you ever looked at stats from dating sites about, like, the different races, like the demand for black women versus Asian men and stuff?
No.
So apparently black women are the least desired and Asian men are the least desired.
Really?
Out of every gender and race combination.
Are you serious?
And so... Yeah, so, like, there's a lot of demand for Asian women. There's a lot of demand for white women. You know, there's... Anyway,
You're saying that they, like, basically took the 2 worst dating races and found the most beautiful people in that race?
Maybe.
Just just teases.
That is interesting, but we haven't really talked about the movie yet, but that's kind of interesting. I saw their race as more of a, because this was like an immigration story as well for both of them.
Yeah, that's true.
So I didn't see that as, I saw that as more authentic than pandering to audiences.
Yeah. I wasn't really sold on their relationship for a while, like until halfway through the movie. The part where it seemed like she really like started to fall for him was when he got kind of humiliated in front of his family, in front of his brother and his dad. And that's when you could kind of see a switch turn on her and she was like totally falling for him. Before that, it seemed like she was a little bit like standoffish.
Because he was like so sly and like had all the pickup lines.
He was a little sly and like a big charmer. He's a romantic. I'll tell you guys, I absolutely love this movie and I didn't think I'd like it at all. I loved it. I want to go see it again. I thought it was so good.
What did you like about it, Ben?
So, of course, everyone was easy on the eyes, but the whole story of where they came from, meeting the expectations of their parents, and they're dealing with consequences of their parents' lives. And I think as, you know, I say all the time, as a parent, I feel like so many things I do are a reaction to how I was brought up. So the son, what's the guy's name?
Like Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel, his parents want him to be a doctor, and he doesn't want to be a doctor. And then the Yara, or Natasha, you know, she didn't have any say in the matter where she came from, and now they're being deported. She, you know, so they're all dealing with that. But the cinematography was incredible. And I absolutely loved the music the entire time. But there were a lot of themes, of course, because, you know, he's Korean. And so his interaction with his parents and their family, it reminded me a lot of, you know, my wife's family.
Did it?
Yeah. I mean, not her, like her siblings. I mean, they're Americans. They grew up here, but her grandpa, he's Korean. He kind of lives in the Korean community. And so I've had, you know, a fair amount of exposure to that where, you know, I could just see that in their lives. That made it really interesting to me. The beginning part where it was kind of lame where you have this girl who just looks amazing and beautiful. She's like, I don't believe in love. And she's trying to be like this clinical scientist in her approaches to everything. I mean, that didn't sell very well, but I love, because she was talking about the very beginning, she's really into astronomy, and it started out quoting Carl Sagan and some of his stuff. In my personal life, that's everything Carl Sagan has ever done to me is like expands my mind. And so, you know, so a lot of these elements really resonated with me, but it was just a beautiful movie beyond that.
I really liked, there were a few cultural lessons. One was about a clip of Daniel as a baby, like choosing his profession. And I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, but I was like, oh, that's weird. That's why he has to be a doctor, because he grabbed
that. Maybe I think it is, but I need to ask Lisa's grandpa to be sure, because that sounds very familiar to me.
Another cultural lesson was how South Koreans got into the black hair care business.
That was interesting.
Because that was so random when they say, like, oh, you guys just
happened to be in black hair care?
Fetish? Or what does she call it?
I don't know.
I will say, I said it was like slightly worse than a Hallmark movie just to be kind of funny, but it was much better. It was entertaining and delightful, and it wasn't as disturbing as John Wick at times, you know?
Well, no, it wasn't disturbing. How did you feel about, I mean, you're rooting for them to get together and you just think they're going to get together and then they don't. And they're talking about, you know, we're just, what is that quote from Carl Sagan? We're like something about a butterfly, or we're momentary, this momentary thing that happens. And it's beautiful because it happened, not because it's always there. It was something like that. And so they equated that with, you know, love and relationships.
I don't know who Carl Sagan is.
He's an astronomer. I just looked him up, right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't he an astronomer?
He's a scientist. He's one. I texted you guys a few weeks ago from one of his books that I read. It's called Science as a Candle in the Dark, A Demon Haunted World.
I remember, I did read what you sent to me. I didn't know that was him.
Yeah.
He's a scientist,
but he's really visible, and he has a way of explaining things in ways that are very easy to understand. And so it kind of connects the dots on why we do science and why we're here as a culture and as people. He's really, I mean, there are just a handful of people have like taken his speeches and like put made YouTube videos out of them. Hmm. I'll send you guys some. They're really inspiring.
So I was, the other cultural lesson that I really liked, I liked all of them actually, but was about, he was explaining how Korean names do the family name first and then the individual name last, kind of the opposite of Americans. And yeah. His dad was complaining about, oh, you're so American. It's all about me. But I did find it so, like, it was just, it bugged me so bad that he wanted to give up a career in as being a doctor. That's not that big of a deal. Like, no, you don't have to be a doctor. Like, I'm okay with somebody choosing not to be a doctor because their family want. But he wanted to be a poet instead. I'm like, is that a job? That is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Well, I have a different take on that, interestingly enough, because I'm not saying that I agree or disagree, but like I was raised, my dad used to tell me all the time about who's the famous one that your teacher taught you the right way to say the poem, to understand the poem. What's his name? He's like famous.
Frost.
Robert Frost. His father was going to pay him like $20,000 to not be a poet. So I was always raised with that. So and having said that, having tried to do art as a profession, I actually agree with you, Seth.
Yeah, like, I mean, now if you want to be a poet, nothing's stopping you. It's like saying I can't be a doctor because I want to ride my bike. It's like, well, you can still ride your bike and be a doctor. You know, you don't have to give up. Being a, if you're into poetry, it's just not a profession.
Well, like, unless are we you supposed want to teach to... or something? Yeah, I mean, Go ahead. What were you gonna say? What do you? Yeah, you're right. Like, you don't like they're not hiring poets.
Yeah, he was supposedly making a living. I don't want to spoil it, but there's a clip where he's making a living like reading his poems at a bar at like a restaurant. Have you ever seen that happen in a real life restaurant? It's like, oh, now we have a poetry reading by.
Well, you know what? Before he did it, he took off an apron. So I think he was wearing multiple hats there.
Yeah. So in other words, he wasn't getting paid for reading his poetry.
Well, maybe he was doing what you said. He threw away his life as a... he threw away his family name and didn't become a doctor. And he was working at a restaurant and just reading poetry on the side.
I guess if that's what he wanted to do with his life.
You're right. And I think him doing that was more symbolic.
It was almost like in my life, I feel like sometimes my mom wants me to get married so badly that I obviously want to get married, but I sometimes feel like I'm like resistant towards that because it's so strong, like of a desire. Right. So maybe it was less about him actually wanting to be a doctor, more just to like, I don't want to do what my parents want me to do. Or
right. And being your own person, because that was a theme through the movie. Well, I mentioned they've been set on a path by their parents, and they found a way to, well, I guess he did a little bit to create his own path.
And you sensed a very, like kind of a strict respect for parents from both of them. And they were often breaking, you know, going against their parents. Like she didn't come home, you know, she was like trying to stay.
Her flashbacks to coming to America in the time with her dad, that just, to me, that just really resonated with me because I think of all the moments I've had with my kids one-on-one, and I just wonder, are they going to remember this? Because it's so, like, meaningful and special to me. But so that really, you know, I enjoyed those parts.
I thought that the movie was a little bit heavy-handed in trying to show you what the theme was. There seemed to be a theme between like science and versus like poetry or destiny.
Right.
The fact that she's wearing a jacket that says Deus Ex Machina on the back of it. And then he, for apparently no reason at all, he just happens to write that same phrase down
the morning
in his poetry book.
Before he meets her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, right from the beginning, you're like, okay, this is not going to be a subtle movie. It's not going to have a subtle message.
And the lawyer that's going to help her crashes right in front of them when he saves her life.
Yeah.
And then the lawyer marries the doctor in the crash.
Yeah.
Yeah. During these parts, I was thinking, wow, this is unusual for a movie. This feels more like a book plot where everything ties together like in coincidence. And then I learned after this was a book.
Yeah, me
and
too.
And they made it into a movie. So that really explains their conversation at the very end. No, I don't want to spoil it.
I guess that's why it kind of made me feel like a Hallmark movie, because in the Hallmark movie, you'll always like have some reporter going to a small town and she happens to meet like the guy at the bus stop who happens to be like the main character that she falls in love with. And it just seemed like everything was like lined up.
Do you mean it seemed like they were following a formula?
Yeah, well, a formula of destiny a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of that movie from 20 years ago, Serendipity. Do you remember that one?
I don't remember that one.
I remember seeing it, but I can't. I can't remember what it was about.
Well, I just do remember one of the themes was serendipity. And during this whole movie, he kept, like, she said some things that I thought were, that I didn't necessarily agree with. One thing she said is, like, she's fighting for, like, science and observable universe, and he's fighting for more, like, magic and destiny, deus ex. Yeah. And she says in one part, if you can't test it using the scientific method, then it's not real.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, well,
that's ridiculous.
That is an unscientific statement, because
right. If
you test it, all it means is you can't test whether it's real or not.
Yeah, that bothered me too. There was a lot of stuff. So they were trying really hard to paint them as opposites.
Yeah, having opposite ideology about love.
I felt like this was kind of like what I always hope happens, like at a club or something. I see the most pretty girl in the world, and I'm just like, I know I'm gonna run into her again. I know it.
It's destiny.
Yeah, and I just felt like they had such good actresses, and they had such good, like, stories about their cultures. I feel like they could have not pushed that quite so hard, and it would have just been maybe even better, like, not try quite so hard, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's clear this was first a book.
Yeah.
But somehow that did not ruin my enjoyment of it. Because I was talking about last week how I loved how well the preview was done. And that was carried through the entire movie. Like, the music and cinematography was just amazing. And of course, these two are beautiful. So. Mm-hmm.
And it was a heartwarming love story. I mean, at the end, he convinces her. He convinces her of love. And so he wins. And love triumphs over whatever science skepticism she had going on.
I also appreciated their... Of course, they had this attraction. It's like these young adults, you know, with these hormones going crazy. I really enjoyed how it didn't feel like it was about sex. It felt like this chemistry and attraction. Like the scene where, and they showed this clip in the preview where they're doing karaoke. By the way, karaoke is a very Korean thing to do.
That's like why it was so funny. He's like, did you say pad Thai? Excuse me, my family's from Korea. Now let's go sing karaoke. Like, that's what they... Don't use Asian stereotypes on me.
Yeah.
There are these two guys on Double Toasted that were joking about that. I thought it was pretty funny.
That is really funny.
Yeah, that is very stereotypical. But that scene where he goes in there, and if you notice, there was some emotional intimacy where they weren't always showing the very best glamorous side of themselves. Like, there was a moment where he's going to go up and sing karaoke, and it's kind of awkward where they're just sitting in the room and it's quiet, and he, like, stands up and kind of walks over there, and it was like this vulnerable moment. And he starts singing the song, and then, you know, you see how it evokes these ideas about their future and her.
Yeah, she starts.
I thought that whole thing was just, it was done so well. And, you know, he talks in the movie, and they did a little bit where they say, I think he said there was a study where they could put couples together and they ask them a bunch of questions, like intimate questions about each other. And then they end by them holding hands and looking each other in the eyes for 4 minutes without speaking. Have you heard of that before?
No, not until I saw this movie.
I did that once. And
oh, really?
With who?
Yeah.
Did it work?
I can't describe how, like, incredible that was.
Who did you do it with?
I'm not going to talk about that.
So I guess it wasn't with Lisa then.
It was a long time ago.
Okay.
Sounds like something you'd test out as a teenager or something.
Yeah.
There's something about just sitting, facing, looking someone in the eyes for that long. You get to the point where, like, okay, this could be awkward. And then you get past that. And it's, you know, it was really interesting.
Sounds like a rush.
So I want to contrast this to another movie we saw a few weeks ago that was also based on a novel. It was also a romance. What was that called, that one we saw?
Oh, the really dumb one?
The one we hated. Yeah.
Where they, like, kiss every second?
They, like, make out the whole time.
And after?
After,
yeah. So, because in that one, I was complaining a lot because they didn't have any chemistry, and they made up for it by just showing all these love scenes of them making out. And in this movie, they did a good job of holding off. They didn't even kiss for maybe an hour into it. And when they did, it was totally earned.
And it felt more intimate.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could feel their chemistry. It was a little cold at first, but you could feel it. And by the end of the movie, you were totally shipping them. You wanted them to get together so bad, and it was so painful that they couldn't.
Are you selling the idea that less is more? Because I feel like they didn't ever sleep together. They just...
Yeah, they kissed once, I think.
In that after show, they did sleep a lot together. So I'm just...
Well, I don't think it's about less is more. It's kind of like... it's like attraction versus lust. And we talk about like toilet humor versus jokes that are good. I think showing people make out and sex, I think it's like, oh, we're going to, it's a cop out and it's not meaningful.
Yeah. I didn't think less is more is right either, Andy, because it's not like they showed less. There was definitely less kissing because there was no kissing, but there was more, it showed you more that they had chemistry instead of just showing them kissing.
How many kisses have you had where you literally did not think about anything? You weren't thinking about, am I kissing good? You were just like, it just happened and you couldn't control it. And like, you didn't have to tell yourself to do anything.
Well, given that I've been married for 16 years, it's not like I worry about my kissing technique anymore.
Well, I always hear that people don't kiss after they get married. But I guess what I'm getting at is...
not true.
Oh, yeah. We kiss all the time. I just don't worry about... Like, I don't worry about anything. I worry about my breath sometimes. Like, oh, I ate some food. Let me go brush my teeth or something. But that's about it.
I guess what I mean more is like they weren't like married, you know, they weren't. And I felt like they made this connection where they like escaped to a different world. And that's only happened to me like once or twice where with a girl like that I was dating, that it was just like these two forces were coming together. No matter what was going to happen, we were going to end up kissing.
I feel like in After, showing them kissing was like telling us that they love each other. But in this movie, instead of telling us by just showing them kissing, they were showing us their chemistry so you kind of feel it and experience it, you know? You've heard the phrase, show me, don't tell me, obviously. And I feel like just showing a couple kissing is more like telling you instead of showing you why.
Oh, that's interesting. And also her flash forward during the karaoke scene. I didn't know if it was like the... I didn't realize it was like a imagination. I thought, oh, we're jumping ahead.
Yeah,
that's what I thought too.
Right.
But, you know, it shows them as a family and, you know, a baby. And it was just, it was really, it just felt fulfilling.
That was my favorite part of the movie.
Okay. Should we wrap it up on The Sun is Also a Star? Okay. That is The Sun is Also a Star. Moving on to coming in at number 4 last weekend is A Dog's Journey.
Bailey, you've done so much for me. When you come back the next time, take care of CJ. Needs you like I needed you.
And then it happened. I was a puppy again, and CJ was my new purpose. She was a gigantic baby now.
I just played a clip from A Dog's Journey. This is about, I guess it's a sequel to A Dog's Purpose. And I don't think any of us have seen it, but...
And a prequel to The Intruder.
Yeah, when I saw the preview today, I kept thinking Dennis Quaid was going to grab the dog and break its neck.
So this is 49% on Rotten Tomatoes. Let me just see what the audience score is. 95% audience score. Wow. That must be self-selecting. I mean,
It's dog lovers.
I don't doubt that I would go... I'm going to go to this movie and totally blubber like a baby. I don't doubt it at all.
Yeah, but you blubber in everything, don't you?
Yeah, I blubbered in The Sun is Also a Star.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, Andy, I did the whole time.
You guys both did?
Oh, yeah.
What's wrong with me? I can see why you guys got married. You're sensitive.
No, it's not about... I mean, it reminded me of moments in my life. And so it just resonated with me, a lot of it, even though it was cheesy.
That is beautiful. It reminded me of...
Going back to Seth, this... what's the dog movie?
A dog's journey.
They screwed up somehow in this preview because my kids do not want to see it.
Oh, interesting.
I thought they'd be all over it because they love animals.
My kids want to see it. I haven't taken them to see
it. So I asked him yesterday, I'm like, hey, we can go see this movie? And like, no. I don't want to see where a dog just keeps coming back. That's what my little girl said.
Huh. Well, audiences loved it. So maybe it's a real feel-good movie. I'll definitely rent it when it comes out. Okay, and that's A Dog's Journey. The next movie coming out that came out last week came in at number 1. This is the first movie to dethrone Avengers Endgame. It earned $57 million over the weekend, compared to Avengers Endgame, which only earned $29 million for the weekend. Although, keep in mind, Avengers Endgame has been out for 4 weeks.
Okay, this weekend. Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was like on their opening weekends, which...
No, gotcha. Yeah. So this last weekend. So just keep in mind, this podcast will release Thursday morning. We're recording it on Sunday. So, I mean, it'll be last weekend by the time anybody hears this. So John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum.
Our services still off limits to me. What do you need? Guns. Lots of guns.
I just played a clip from the trailer for John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. This is currently 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. We've all seen it. So let's hear your thoughts, guys. I can't wait to talk about this one.
Well, let me think for a sec. There's so much to like about this movie. It was awesome. It was really awesome. I feel like there was a little bit in this movie where they were self-conscious about, oh, there's a big audience now. We have to like do this and we have to do that instead of continuing what they'd done previously.
I thought they really improved on what they'd done previously.
Well, it was good. Did you notice the first, 45 minutes? He never has a gun. And felt like it was so deliberate. Someone just said, oh, we got to mix it up a bit and we have to.
Like the knife so scene where. They like all grab knives and that it was almost humorous. Yeah. It was humorous. Yeah, I mean, there artsy.
Really diverse fighting styles and things.
Well,
it was
really
good.
I'm very grateful that we got some creative fight scenes because gunfighting, I feel like John Wick has done everything that can be done with gunfights. And it gets to a point where it's just not as entertaining to watch. And when it gets in a position where he doesn't have any guns, he's in an antique weapon shop and all those knives and like he got this really old fashioned gun, like this World War One gun, and he's taking it apart and trying to load bullets in it.
Yeah, it was like 5 minutes putting the gun together and getting a bullet in there.
But that knife scene, I've never seen anything like that because he has an unlimited amount of knives hang on display behind him, and they run out of ammo. I can't remember what happened, but they look behind him and find these knives, and he literally turns one of these guys into like a human pincushion with the knives. And he's like, he's throwing him, they hit each knee, then each like two spots in the abdomen, each arm, and then right in the head.
Forehead.
Yeah. It's got to be like the coolest fight scene I've ever seen with knives.
It was pretty cool, intense.
Yeah, that was really cool. You know, what's really, that scene also illustrated something about the John Wick series, all three of them, that make it so appealing is that you feel like he earns everything. If you notice, they always show him stopping and reloading his gun.
I like that. Yeah.
And there was that moment with in the scene with those knives where he didn't have a weapon. The other guy didn't have a weapon. They're like,
they both
turn away at the same time. Like, can we grab it? Do I have enough time to break the glass and grab a knife?
It's funny the way they're like glance behind them. They like want to make sure they don't get killed by glancing behind. They just hurry and glance back to like, I got to see what weapons are behind me.
Yeah. So I really appreciated everything felt earned. He wasn't this invisible guy with this never-ending turret.
Yeah.
He always had to stop and reload. He had a...
And he was vulnerable. It looked like a lot of times he could have been taken down. And it was almost mercy of the... So it wasn't like he was this unstoppable force, you know? He was definitely human. He had this legend that they called him the boogeyman, but you could tell that he a lot of times in his fighting, people got the better of him. Not just in this movie, but in the first two as well.
Yeah, and that was interesting. These baddies really could have taken him out if they wanted to. They missed some good opportunities.
Are you talking about the end of the movie where they're like so starstruck? They're like,
that too.
Oh, it's a pleasure to fight against you, Mr. Wick. Right. And they're having this conversation like, oh, he's getting slower than he used to be. And the other guy's, but he's still John Wick. Like,
right. That was so cool. Those twins, he's fighting them both at the same time. And they had him bested. And instead of killing him, they like help him up. Like, okay, let's do round two. So, and that goes along with a theme of their world where they're not just out to kill everybody. There are rules about respect and like his moral system. He didn't kill everybody.
Yeah. Well, he never killed anybody except for in self-defense in this movie.
Yeah, you're right. But it was interesting how even though it was just a big murdering spree, there were rules and there was a respect that everyone had about that. Like and especially at the end, those twins, that scene where...
Yeah.
Like when he puts his hand on the continental...
On the
doorstep.
And the guy stops fighting. Then they walk in together and he sits right by him. Like it's kind of like when you go into a bathroom stall and there's like 40 open and you go use one and a guy comes right next to you. It's like that's reason for a fight. But
how did you feel about that character?
I loved him once he did that scene.
It was great.
He seems so scary, and then all of a sudden he's like a little kid in a baseball shot.
He was obviously starstruck, but he's also like this deadly assassin.
Yeah.
I thought he pulled it off pretty good.
It was awesome.
He
annoyed me.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see why he would annoy you a little bit too. So I want to talk about just some of the creative action scenes that I've never seen before. We already talked about the knife fight. The very first one, though, is a book fight.
Oh, my and gosh.
If
oh, yeah.
If you think of, like...
Oh, that giant.
What's... Yeah, that guy must have been 8 feet tall, wasn't he? I mean, he was so huge. Tall. Like, if you gave somebody a book and said, okay, just kill me the most creative way you can with the book, I'd probably just whack somebody with it, but...
Yeah.
The thing that he did...
Yeah, that's the end of my ideas, too.
First of all, he force feeds him the book. He's like pounding it down his throat. And then he puts the book right on its spine and gets the guy's like neck and cracks it over the spine of the book.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, it was just so delicious and gruesome at the same time.
It was
the
final haymaker that's like, he's done.
Okay. So, and then there's another scene.
He also grabbed the book and started like hitting the book against his head instead of hitting his head.
Yeah.
So he was like hitting the book, but not the head.
I didn't understand because it almost would soften his blow.
Yeah. You know? So I was a little confused.
But and speaking of creative action scenes, there was a point where he got to this horse stable, and instead of punching the guys, he's whipping the horse and having the horse like kick back and knock these guys out.
Yeah.
And that seemed kind of unrealistic, but it was just so funny.
Yeah, it was really
creative. So unrealistic. It was like annoying and satisfying at the same time. Like, that's not how horses work. But he kept doing it and like taking out these baddies, like the horse kicking him.
Yeah. And then there's another part in the movie where there's an underwater, like, just like face off with basically an underwater gunfight with two characters. And it's almost in slow motion because they kind of have to swim while they're doing it. And the, like, the goon that's fighting against John Wick shoots the gun, like fires 3 or 4 rounds at him. And they go about 3 feet and slow down and then just drop to the bottom. And then John Wick like swims over to him and just shoots him point blank. I thought that was really cool because I've never seen an underwater gunfight.
That scene was really cool. That was so cool, that scene. Yeah, it was like slow motion. So towards the end, all these bad guys come in. They have like that full armor.
Yes.
So
You say what you're going to say. I wanted to talk about that too.
Well, it was just what was so interesting about that is this movie was it's just over 2 hours. So we'd been seeing him just mow people down like crazy for an hour and a half. So he has to do this new technique. All these armored people has to like lift up their visor after he takes them down and to do a point blank shot. But then he goes and upgrades his armory he gets the shotguns.
He gets 12 gauge,
so satisfying.
12 gauge slugs. So they weren't like, so normally a shotgun shell is full of like little pellets, but
or something.
Yeah. But a slug is like just one big bullet basically. And in the first scene with it, you see what it does to the helmet. And it basically like turns that guy's head into applesauce. It's like totally splits open.
Yeah. So that was really satisfying. And as I reflected on it, he started out with barely any weapons and then he got some weapons. By the end, he had upgraded weapons.
Yeah.
And so it was satisfying how it progressed and that made it not get old.
What was cool about the guys coming in with the armor, you're kind of like, well, John Wick's going to take him down. Of course he's going to take him down. We've already seen him.
Right.
But he shoots the first two guys and the guys fall down and you assume that they're dead. But then one guy, you see him like crawling back up and he shoots him again. And then the other guy crawls back up and you suddenly realize like these bullets are just bouncing off of these guys because of their armor. Ooh. It was a really cool reveal. Did you see that part,
really cool
because
he's walking away. Then he hears the guy cough.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Andy, cut you off. Did you see that part, Andy?
No.
Andy left before that part.
Okay. So, Andy, that was the part. Well, like Seth was saying, like he just took out two guys. He walks away, but he hears them like kind of coughing, like they're not dead. And so he realizes, oh, they have armor. And that's the part where the Care Bears came out and they joined forces and they each got a gun.
The mm-hmm. Care Bears.
Yeah. And then they
and
all
Rainbow
sang
Bear,
songs and
like,
lived happily ever after.
So, and then one more creative fight scene I thought was kind of cool was fighting with the dogs. So Halle Berry had these. Her character had these two dogs and they would kind of join in the fight. And it was just kind of cool. They would distract. They kept going for guys' crotches.
Yeah.
Although it did
seem... If I made the movie, I would have taken all those parts out.
Really?
That was an eye roll for me. What? Just the dogs. The dogs attacking.
I think dogs could be vicious and deadly. I feel like in the movie, it didn't look very realistic because dogs would probably go for the throat, right? Like if they were military dogs or dogs trained to kill, they'd probably go for the throat, and they never did in this movie, which I can understand why, because like trained dogs...
Directors?
Yeah, they would only go for like the arm or the belly or the groin, but they wouldn't go for the throat, probably because it's just too dangerous to like film that and get those type of dogs.
Do you think they were trained to be unit creators?
I doubt it. I assume that, yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're probably police dogs, right? Don't police dogs
attack the...
Like, they attack to disarm people, not necessarily to kill them.
That's true.
Yeah, they train by having them grab the forearm.
Yeah, and then a military dog would probably attack to kill. They'd go for the throat. And so it seemed like these dogs were a little bit nerfed, you know, because they kept not going for the throat, which seems like the natural instinct of a killer dog to go for the throat. But it was still enjoyable. It was cool to see.
I thought it was, it reminded me of like kind of imagining them going after Osama bin Laden with those dogs. They had dogs with them. And they were just kind of like, reminded me of like how dogs are used. And dogs were a big theme in this series.
Yeah, I mean, big time.
Right.
They were subtly, but also, yeah.
And probably the biggest laugh in this movie was when Braun, the sellsword, shoots Halle Berry's dog and it falls down and Halle Berry's like, he killed my dog. And John Wick is like, don't freak out. Don't do anything. She's like, he shot my dog. He's like, I get it.
I know. Yeah. Trust me.
And everybody in my theater was like, started giggling because like this whole rampage of John Wick is all because they killed a dog.
It is. They laughed in the theater as well.
I felt like I didn't like the way Halle Berry's character came across, how she spoke, how her dogs were there. That to me was just a big eye roll. And it felt like to me that all of that inclusion was because the film's creators were self-conscious. And they felt like, oh, people don't want to see the movie because a dog got killed in the beginning of the first one. We have to like have dogs get their justice. That's just how it felt to me. And it came across kind of corny how the dogs attacked everybody.
It really worked for me.
Are you saying, Ben, it might have worked better if the dog had actually died again?
No. I just feel like having those dogs get justice and all the bad guys, it felt like the movie's creators were self-conscious. Mm. Like it was dogs. Only put in there because they're like, oh, we want dogs to get justice. And also the way it was done just felt corny.
Hmm. You know, one thing that was kind of interesting, what I've noticed about John Wick fight choreography is he does a lot of throws, which doesn't seem very natural. It wouldn't be necessarily the most effective way to take down a bad guy.
You mean like wrestling throws?
Yeah, wrestling throws. He'll take their arm and throw them on the ground. And he's been doing that since the first movie. But then in this movie, when he goes back to like, I guess where he was raised, and there's this really brief scene where they walk through and there's these Greco-Roman kids like doing, you know, practicing wrestling throws.
Yeah, wrestling.
And she's like, oh, does this bring you memories and stuff? And I was like, okay, well, that actually kind of explains why he does so many throws.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that explains his backstory, because there's been speculation. Was he in the military? Where did he learn all this stuff?
It did explain a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting, Seth, because I did notice that. Like, it was like almost like an artistic, or like in a music where you hear the motif over and over. That's his like signature fighting. He'd like grab their arm, pulled over his shoulder, and swing the guy across onto the ground, and then gunshot him right in the head.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do we want to do spoilers on this? I have a little bit I want to talk about.
Yeah, let's go to spoilers.
Okay, we're going to now go into spoilers for John Wick. The rest of this conversation will be moved to the end of the episodes in the spoiler section. Okay, well, next week we're going to do Brightburn and Booksmart and maybe Aladdin, right? I feel like Aladdin maybe doesn't need a review, but
I'm not going to do Aladdin. I'm going to do Brightburn.
And Booksmart?
Booksmart, yeah.
Okay. This is the end of the spoiler-free section. Thank you for listening to TWIM. The two things that help us most are subscribing and rating our podcast on iTunes. If you want to contact us, you can reach us on Twitter at @TWIM_weekly. You can also email us to thisweekinmoviespodcast@gmail.com. We're now beginning our deep dive discussion portion of the show, which will include spoilers for John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. If you do not want to hear spoilers, then stop listening here. But sometimes spoilers make you enjoy it more, so go ahead and feel free to listen. The end.
The end.
Oh, we got dating section.
Yeah, Andy's dating.
Well, something really interesting happened to me. I remember about 20 years ago, roughly 18 years ago, Seth and I and Jacob were all at the spa, and there was this really attractive lifeguard. And we all started talking to her. And it was one of those moments where like we found out we all went to high school together. And I was like, how did I not meet this girl? And then I remember being like really weirded out that she didn't like, you know, So fast forward another 10 years, I ask her out and she just didn't like me.
When, 10 years ago?
Yeah. You know, and then fast forward to this week, I get on this Mormon dating app and we matched up and she's kind of messaging me saying we should hang out. So I had to review all my pictures on the dating site to see what was like so good about them. No, it was just interesting. Like you kind of want to be like, gosh, why didn't you just like me 20 years ago? But we haven't even gone out. We haven't really even talked, but it's just kind of a weird, dating's weird.
I know her.
The worst.
I know her pretty well, actually. We went to Lake Powell together right after my mission.
Yeah.
I took her and Brienne.
You took both? Two girls?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing. Wait, you took two girls?
Well, yeah, Lindy was kind of an afterthought, but...
But you liked them both?
No. I only liked Brienne, but all the guys were happy that Lindy was there.
Yeah, she's beautiful. Like, it's like this torture.
Yeah. Because she's 40, right?
She's 38 on her Tinder profile.
38?
She's probably just about to turn 39.
No, she's at least 39.
Well, I can show you on her. I guess...
No, I believe you.
I mean, I do switch my age sometimes when I'm trying to meet different demographics.
Oh, my goodness.
You do?
Well, if I didn't tell the truth, I'd be lying, yes. But
it lets you change your age?
So if you're just joining us, we're discussing spoilers for John Wick 3, John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum. The main thing that I was wondering after this movie is, when Winston shot John Wick and basically shot him off the edge of the building... Was he trying to save John Wick, or was he really trying to kill him?
That, to me, it was obvious he was trying to save him. Like, that was his only out. Because he didn't shoot John in the face.
Yeah.
He shot him in the body.
Where he knew it would be bulletproof.
Yeah, and I guess John's fall was very brutal.
Yes, but very brutal.
I think Winston, that was probably the best move, but I guess you could theorize he knew the building and he knew what the fall would be like and maybe he could bounce off some awnings.
Yeah, or maybe he just knew that John Wick is like a little, he's like 10% superhero, so
he'll
probably just survive.
Like at the beginning of the movie, he gets hit by two cars, gets up and runs into the building.
Yeah. His invincibility is creeping up a bit.
Yeah.
Maybe a little too much. I was also surprised because I thought this was going to be the end, but the way they ended it, I think there's going to be a fourth movie.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the title of this movie is Parabellum, which is Latin for prepare for war. And the whole movie was a buildup for a war between the High Table and, I don't know, and the
hotel. I thought he was going to take down the High Table at the end of the movie.
I thought something was going to happen.
He's on the side of the hotel, right? With that black guy?
The reason, Ben, that I think that maybe Winston was trying to save John Wick is because the concierge right afterwards said, "Well played, sir." And then the scene with the adjudicator where she says, "John Wick isn't there anymore. He disappeared." It makes it, you know, Winston kind of has this look like he knows that he set John Wick free.
Yeah, I think that was the only move. What would have sold me more is if John had a softer landing.
Yeah, exactly.
But because it was so brutal and like he should have died. You know, he's not Kung Fu Panda. He can't go bouncing down off buildings like crazy.
Yeah.
Kung Fu Panda.
Okay, anything else?
But that was a very satisfying ending where what's the pigeon guy?
The pigeon guy's down in the sewer. He's the king of the Bowery. The Bowery King.
Wait, didn't the pigeon guy die?
No. He got seven cuts, but there's a reveal at the very end of the movie that he survived.
Oh, okay.
And he still has his henchmen, or little bum guys.
So once John Wick gets shot off of the building and falls, one of the homeless guys picks him up and takes him to the Bowery King.
The
and that's Matrix the final scene. Guy. The what?
Yeah.
The Matrix guy. Isn't that guy?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. They're both from the Matrix. Yep. That's funny.
Right. And so this could totally be like a
Neo.
To the Matrix?
Yeah. He's going to wake up. This is how John Wick Chapter 4 is going to be him waking up from the Matrix. And he's like, oh, that was a crazy dream.
Wouldn't that be cool?
No, you know what? They need Agent Smith to show up.
Oh, that would be so good.
That would be awesome.
Even if it was just kind of like a gag, that would just be so funny if he was one of the goons.
A cameo or something?
Yeah, like if there was like
I just want him to walk in and like, Mr. Anderson.
Ben, do you know what Andy's doing while we're talking about this movie?
Texting?
No, he's swiping left and right.
On Tinder?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
He's just sitting here halfway involved in our conversation and swiping left and swiping right.
No, I just took a moment to take a deep breath and relax a little bit while I was listening to the commentary.
I think you might be phone addicted.
Let's not joke with anyone. Everyone's phone addicted.
I know.
I love my phone. I love everything about it.
Okay. Any other spoiler discussion, Ben? I think that's the only thing I wanted to talk about in spoilers.
So a little bit, I heard people talking about a prequel for this.
A prequel? I haven't heard about that. That'd be interesting.
I've heard people talk like online saying, oh, the prequel's coming. But the way this ended, that's not
there's
a prequel.
There's got to be a sequel.
There's got to be a four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there could be a prequel as well, but it seems like they strongly set up a sequel to this.
Well, if you think this is about money or about the they probably want to drag it out, right? And make another, like maybe sneak in a prequel.
Yeah, why wouldn't they? Why not make 21 movies out of this?
Well, as long as they're good. Well, Andy, you saw John Wick 1 and 2 this week, right?
Yep.
What did you think?
Because
you said you were going to tell us.
I had euphoria in the first minutes of the first movie because one of my superhero dreams is to be able to secretly understand every language in the world. And so he pulls up to this gas station and there's these thug Russian guys that walk up.
Theon Greyjoy.
Yeah, Theon Greyjoy.
Right.
They walk up to him and they're like, he's like, how much is your car for sale? He's like, it's not for sale. And then he says something in Russian.
Every bitch has a price.
And then he responds in Russian. And he says, like, what did he say? He's like,
not this bitch.
Not this bitch. I loved it, though. It was like cooler than like a superpower of like being invisible or something. Being able to like understand and communicate with people when they don't think you can is amazing. And then that sparks the entire, it was really sparked over a car and then a dog.
Yeah. I mean, I think both. Like John Wick 2, he gets his car back. John Wick 1, he doesn't get his dog back, but he avenges the death of the dog.
If you call that getting his car back, wasn't it just totally destroyed?
Yeah, but a guy came to fix it.
That's true. I will say that I texted, after that scene though, I texted everyone in my phone book that I thought might like it. You have got to watch John Wick's.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
My little brother and everyone. But then as it went, it was so like
gory.
The same thing over and over of just killing people and beating people up. It's not that I didn't not like it. I just kind of got bored.
There were definitely some scenes in John Wick 3 that I had to look away. Like the knife going into the guy's eyeball.
Yeah.
Like I could I could not look.
Yeah, everyone in the audience was like, oh. And then when he throws.
So my prediction. Oh, I meant to say this earlier. My prediction is in the fourth one, those two twins who he let live.
Yeah.
That they will like be on his side. They'll be his little henchmen.
Yeah. And maybe even, I don't know. Maybe. That would be cool. Yeah. So it's unclear what Winston's going to do in the next one. Is he going to be on the side of the high table or on John Wick's side? Because he pledged fealty again to the high table. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next one. Okay. That's John Wick 3. Parabellum. That wraps up our spoiler section. Thanks for listening to the podcast. See you next week.